Hey guys, Nick here.
Sir.
And Kyle. Do we really need to do that for the intro? That's fine. Anyways, on this week's episode, we're talking about Cabin in the Woods. So if you have not seen it, hit pause right now. Well, after I finish telling you this, hit pause and then check it out on Netflix. Otherwise, we do spoil the movie a little bit. Although, I do think it's kind of one of those movies where, even though there may or may not be a twist of some sort, it's kind of unspoilerable in a way. Like, it's about the message, not about the surprise. So it's up to you. I don't know. Do whatever you
There's
want.
There's a lot of spoilers.
Yeah, but yeah, there are spoilers, so if you're real sensitive, hit pause, check it out, and then take a listen. Okay, bye. From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 21 of On the Tropes. I'm your host, Nick, and today we are talking about the movie Cabin in the Woods. We'll talk about our top five tropes used in Cabin in the Woods, and then we'll play a little game. But first, as always, I am joined by two of my co-hosts, the Ancient Ones.
Sir.
And Kyle.
Kyle, what's new since the last time you've been on the show?
I got this heavy ring on my finger. That's kind of new. I got a nice tan too
from Jamaica.
Yeah. So
Jake wanted to know if you were slapping the bass man.
No, slapping the bass man.
Yeah, I saw your photos on Facebook. It looks like a young Frankie Avalon, folks.
Sir, what's new with you?
Pretty much nothing. I guess sort of new. My daughter's 7. That's sort of new. I'm progressing in parenting and parental age, so I'm just getting older and older. Mm-hmm. Definitely an ancient one here.
Yep.
I saw This Is England for the first time. I have, as some of you know, I'm on a quest to see every single skinhead film ever made, just because I feel like they're, I don't know, I just like to see how the other side lives.
They're very happy movies.
And yeah, some of them are pretty good. There's also this ongoing thing where major foreign leading men have roles as skinheads, and then they later cross over off of those roles. And I'll get into it someday.
All right. I saw Gravity last night in 3D. Awesome
nice,
movie.
Nice.
I would highly recommend anybody seeing it. By the time this gets released, it's probably going to have blown up into a big old thing.
I think it's already kind of a big...
Yeah, because it's already... I think it's number one this weekend at the box office.
Yeah.
And it's the second weekend it's been out.
I saw a couple of Facebook posts, people tripping while watching that movie. Yeah. I've seen that movie in the theaters. They're like, oh, it was just the most intense experience of my life. And
oh, it was
people have found religion off George Clooney and Sandra Bullock, which yeah. I guess we always did.
It was intense anyway. I wouldn't recommend any hallucinogenics. You might get lost forever.
Yeah, really.
All right, so on this week's episode, in honor of the upcoming Halloween, we're talking about the movie Cabin in the Woods. It's a movie that made Kyle's number two when we talked about
movies of that year.
Genre busting.
Oh.
And Sir's number one for the Chekhov's Gun episode. So it's a movie that we like enough to have made a few lists. Sir, what is it that you like about this movie?
I think what I like about it is it's... Overall, like its message is really, it's really layered. It's it might seem obvious at first, and yet you can draw a lot out of the movie with repeated viewings. And I think the writing is it helps it. It keeps it from being just the humor in it keeps it from being what could have been kind of a tired. Mm-hmm. Cliched parody, deconstructed parody, you know, in it.
So what's the message that you...
I think to me the main message of the film is that... And are we on spoilers here?
Oh, yeah.
I think this whole episode is going to be...
Yeah, it's a full-blown spoiler episode.
Essentially, the great old gods, the ancient ones, are, of course, the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the outer, clear answer to it. I think, however, there's a deeper message to the viewer... as represented by Marty, and just how we go about escaping from our imprisonment, in commercialism, you know, the being imprisoned by Hollywood's, you know, horrible retreads and our addiction to blood as an audience, and just kind of how we turn it around.
Yeah. Needing to get off the grid.
Right, and just kind of his symbolism in the movie is actually pretty clear. If you...
Yeah, and I think the symbolism or the metaphor of the Ancient Ones being us as the audience are pretty straightforward, but I still like them, and I like what this movie does, is that it's... I think it works both as a horror movie and as a parody of horror movies.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of like our generation's Monster Mash or Scream. You didn't so much like my comparison to Scream earlier, however.
Yeah, I think this is a more fun movie than Scream.
I think it's a better movie than Scream, yes.
Yeah.
What I think this is more close to, actually, is Shaun of the Dead, how it's a parody of zombie movies while at the same time being an awesome zombie movie.
Yeah.
Kyle, what do you think about Cabin in the Woods?
Yeah, I really loved it too. I think what's really interesting about this movie, at least when I saw it, was I remember watching previews of it and it looking like a completely different movie. But I guess they had to do that in a way, not to spoil what the whole premise of the movie is, which is that it's not just this cabin. It's more, and it's about what goes on behind everything. But yeah, I agree that it's awesome how it's a really good combination of just straight horror, but also with this smarter take on it. It's not one of these slasher movies where, like, with a dumb antagonist or something. It's got stuff behind the scenes that is really interesting, and every time you watch it, you notice something different in, like, the little details behind everything. Yeah, there's
a lot of small, subtle details.
Like, when they were doing their bedding, I paused it to look at the whole board and the list of creatures that were on it, and the whole list is just hilarious.
There's a lot of shout outs in the list.
One thing
I like in the movie that I didn't notice the first time I watched it is when they're throwing up their bets, and the one guy makes a bet, and I forget his name, but the bad guy from Billy Madison is like, I don't even know if we have those. And the guy says, I talked to zoology.
Yeah.
And then later you see a unicorn.
Yeah.
I think one cool thing about this movie, and it's probably cool that we're doing this episode because it's the trope movie to me. It's like it's a movie about tropes. It's a movie about symbols. It's a movie about storytelling conventions. It's a movie about cliches. It's a movie about all those things, and I think it's just pretty cool how they he really is kind of going after that whole concept that stories and our symbols and subconscious symbols have to go a certain way. He's kind of attacking that concept.
I was going to say, I think it's fitting, like we did our Breaking Bad overview a couple weeks ago, and now this is like the first movie we're doing an overview episode on, and I think it's an appropriate one since it's very trope. It's very conscious of the tropes. It's
right.
The tropes it does on purpose. It takes the Friday the 13th, those types of slasher elements, or Halloween, like, I'll get it when we talk about my top five, but even the roles of the fool and I forget what the five are. It's like the fool, the jock, the dumb fool, the virgin,
the fool, the athlete, the whore, the virgin, the
scholar.
The scholar, and then yeah. Although I like that also that she's like the virgin.
We work with
what we have, and all of them are. I think Joss Whedon was extremely conscious of what those symbols meant, like mean, and like the tarot and meaning, and all those other things, because he really does. He sticks some of that in the movie.
Mm. Yeah,
I'll get into that in my list. You know, I was really impressed with the level of acting. I watched it again today, and so I've seen it twice. I remember the first time I saw it, I liked it a lot upon immediate viewing, and then over time thinking about it, I think it kind of faded a little. I kind of rewatched things in my head, pull holes, and find it, and I couldn't really think of that many memorable things. And then watching it again, I really enjoyed the acting. Like, it was surprisingly good. They managed to find some really talented new actors.
Yeah, I was gonna say most of those actors aren't from too many things. Obviously Thor.
Right.
We know Thor.
Yeah.
And like Richard Jenkins, I think, is a pretty famous guy. One of the scientists, or
yeah, he's a really famous character actor for sure.
And then Amy Acker's been in. She's the girl scientist who works for the chem department. She's been in a lot of Joss Whedon's works. Like, she's in Angel, and she's in Much Ado About Nothing.
She pretty much plays the same role in all of them, right? She's like a scientist.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, in Dollhouse, she's a doctor. in Angel, she's a scientist, and this, she's a scientist, so she must be smart. I don't think in the Shakespeare play she's a scientist. And then Marty has been in some other Joss Whedon works. I think he's, character-wise, he's my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah, the first time I watched it, he was the one character that I thought was the best, and I didn't... He really overshadowed everyone else, but then when I watched it again, they're not bad. They're just not as memorable as he is, just because his personality is so...
He gets all the, he gets all the best lines. And
for sure.
Obviously, there's the... I'm sure we'll get into it when we talk about our favorite tropes, but he's the fool, and yet he's not the fool. Like, he's...
What was the... Crouching tiger, hidden badass or something, or crouching stoner.
Yeah, that's one of his tropes. He's been in some... he's in Orange County. He's in Training Day. He's the college kid that gets pulled over in Training Day.
It's sort of coming back to me.
Because he was in Donnie Darko as well. Yeah, hopefully we see this guy in more stuff, because I thought he had a really good balance. He wasn't just like a weak, stoner, dumb character. Any of those characters are usually... The dumb character, whether he's a stoner or not, is generally ineffective and weak. And he had like a really nice confidence about him.
Yeah.
You know, I really liked his drive, his bong thing. The cops will never pull over a man. Fear him.
So what about your guys' favorite scenes from this movie? Like, what's one scene that stands out to you?
I mean, besides when the elevator doors first open, like the whole second half of the movie is just ridiculous, because it's really just an homage, or not an homage, whatever.
An allusion to...
So many different great monster movies.
Yeah, I do have to say, though, that when you see all the different compartments, like as they pan out and you see all the different compartments of the things that they could have had...
I
think that's my favorite single shot from the movie. Yeah. It's just...
That's a really good one.
It looks great, and it's kind of terrifying, like, when you think about these are all the different fates that these characters could have had.
Yeah.
I'd say for me, I don't really have one specific one. Just kind of list them off real quick. The shot you mentioned, Nick, with, you know, showing all the monsters, it was just such a great... I mean, really, a beautiful shot. I mean, I could imagine that, like... is a huge poster.
Yeah,
the monsters, each one. So Joss, get us that thing. I like the scene where, I can't think of her name, the blonde girl, the whore. She makes out with the wolf.
Don't you mean an elephant?
Or what moose?
The moose.
Yeah.
I dare you to make out with that moose over there.
Marty, have you ever seen a moose before?
Whatever that mysterious beast is.
That's clearly a wolf.
That was just a really tense moment, and I thought for sure
because you think something horrible is going to happen,
and it never does, and yet it's still so disturbing, just how she does it. I think that's why she is the horror of the movie. It's essentially that scene that makes her worthy to die.
Yeah.
I like the scene where. Sigourney Weaver's listing off how each one died when they should have, and it shows a clip of that person dying. So she goes like the athlete, and he hits the wall, and da da da. And then she says Marty, and there's no clip, and instead he just like looks to the right. And I think that's really just significant in the movie, and just like who he is in the film.
What about,
and of course, the merman.
The merman is one of the things
that's the only thing I can remember like really clearly in my mind from after the first viewing was just that scene.
What about what are some other monsters other than we'll say merman aside, what are more monsters that you would have liked to see more of in this movie,
more of or just included at all?
Either or
I just love when they do open the doors and then they show all the security cameras. Like, each monster has its particular style. Like, the clown, like, ripped out someone's intestines or something. And then the masked people, they're, like, really calm about what they do, but they're, like, torturing someone, obviously. And then the unicorn stabbing that guy. And it's just, like, so crazy how there's so many different ways you can scare people killed. And take people out. And that dancer without a face is just dancing around. Yeah, I was doing anything say, really.
I think the one that I would have liked to see is the faceless dancer, or it's not even like face. It's just
a
like
mouth.
Her face is a giant like bear trap.
Yeah,
her face is like what the big is it Judah Buckner uses? He uses the bear trap and just throws it at people.
Oh yeah, what yeah.
a great weapon.
Yeah. That would have been it would have been nice to see more of that. I liked on the board. Kevin is on the board, and
it just says
apparently,
Kevin?
Yeah, it says Kevin.
Is it a Sin City?
Yeah, allegedly, that's the leading theory is that it's Kevin from Sin City, which I think is awesome. That would have been awesome.
Or the giant molesting tree.
Yeah,
that would have been cool to see.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of so many great things. Mm. I like how the Doom Bat was really impressive.
I do like the bat too.
Oh, and they also had witches, but they also had sexy witches.
Right, right.
Which
it's a
trope,
difference.
But I forget which one
it was. It's a much better way to.
It was like hotter or sexier. I think that's the trope, but it's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to go. That's if you get to choose, that's what I would have chosen.
Sexy witches.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I was thinking about this movie is, say they try to do the same thing. Only it's not a comedy at all. Like they take out all the humor from it. Does it work?
I think it does only because the acting was so good in the movie. But I don't think it is as good of a movie overall because I think good horror movies kind of need that sort of break from
like
really intense moments.
Relief of tension.
Like, that's what Marty was the entire time, like when he's reading that Nemo book. It was right after some really intense stuff in the basement, and I think it was right after the basement. But yeah, it was... Yeah, his character really gave you a break from all the action and heavy stuff that you saw.
Because what I was thinking is basically, if you take all the like the Marty pothead jokes and that stuff out of this movie, don't you kind of get Funny Games? Isn't that sort of what Funny Games is?
Yeah. It's a more uncomfortable movie.
Right. And,
yeah.
And you know what's funny, though, is...
Games.
That's right. Cabin in the Woods is... I would say 10 times more effective in its message than Funny Games is.
I think,
and this is just my opinion, folks. Not that I think that Funny Games is a bad movie. I think it's a good movie. I'm not really saying anything about its merit as a film. I guess I'm just saying that if its intended message is to get the audience to realize that they are the sadistic viewer here, it essentially fails by the fact that there are no consequences for the characters who are the audience, who are the killers.
You think it's a little too sadistic, whereas...
Well, there's no answer. There is absolutely no answer, and whereas Cabin in the Woods has an answer.
Yeah.
The main characters, they make a change. They make a difference, and there's consequences to them based on that change, that difference. So it's just a much more intelligent.
Yeah,
you know exactly how you're supposed. What you?
Funny Games has that replay.
Yeah, Funny Games even takes it so far that not only do they not have consequences, but they have consequences, and then
they redo it.
Right. And it's just he's still showing us because there's no humor. He's still just showing us something that we want to see. By injecting humor into it, you're actually able to tell the story. You're actually able to get to tell the lesson, I should say.
Yeah.
Whereas he screwed up. I feel like as a storyteller and thinking that he could teach this serious, complicated, huge issue with just showing us violence and a smarmy kid, you know, I mean, it wasn't really, it was too serious to work, I think.
Yeah.
That there's no humor. It's just, it's not, it's a much blacker comedy.
I still think it's like just one of those movies where it's like, you know, you're trying to teach us a lesson, yet you're still showing us everything you're criticizing us for. You are still, you know.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's blacker comedy as opposed to Pop-Tarts. But I do think it's interesting that both of these movies are trying to say the same thing, but from completely different angles, and both of them can be effective on varying degrees of success. So that's our discussion on the movie Cabin in the Woods. If you haven't seen it, but listen to all this, you can check it out on Netflix right now.
After we've thoroughly ruined it for you.
Right. I mean, just spoiler. Spoiler territory here. Spoiler yeah, country.
Check it out.
This is I guess this is for the folks who have already seen it.
Yeah. Join us after the break, and we're going to talk about our top five tropes used in Cabin in the Woods.
I thought this tape was going to be a conversation stimulator, man. I was going to ask you for your top five records to play on a Monday morning and all that, and you just had to ruin it. Hope we'll do it next Monday. No! I'm going to do it now!
Welcome back to episode 21 of On the Tropes. We are talking about our top five tropes used in the movie Cabin in the Woods. Sir, what's your number five?
My number five is face death with dignity and slash one last smoke. And I'm pretty sure that's, yeah, just the end of the movie.
When he has his last smoke. Marty and he faces Dana. Death with dignity.
Right, Marty and Dana, they just kind of are.
I wonder if this is actually a sub trope called One Last Toke.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's maybe just for any kind of vaporous substance inhaled. So, yeah, I just thought it was cool that, I'm especially proud of TV Tropes for listing that as going out with dignity, because I think that is one of the, if I had to go out, I'd like to go out like that. Kyle, your number five.
My number five is, we talked about it earlier, but taxidermy terror when she I forget the horse name, which is awful.
Yeah, we'll just call her the blonde girl.
When she makes out with the moose, aka the wolf, just because what we said earlier, how it the way it's shot and the way the music kind of builds, you feel like something really terrible is going to happen, because it's this terrifying looking taxidermy thing, and it's
like, who would have that in their house?
Yeah, it's scary as hell, but yeah, it's just built up for nothing really, and it's a really funny scene just with how Marty sort of sets up the dare. So I think that scene's really funny. What about you, Nick?
My number five is a trope called negated moment of awesome, and it's where the hero is about to do something awesome, and then at the last second it doesn't work. And that moment of awesome is when the jock is going to jump make the jump on his dirt bike, and it looks like he's definitely going to make it, and then he hits the force field wall, and it fails miserably.
If I wipe out, I'll fucking limp for help, but I'm coming back here. I'm coming back with cops and choppers and large fucking guns, and those things are gonna pay for Jules.
So as we did for the Breaking Bad episode, I have other examples that I like of each of these tropes. So my example of negated moment of awesome that I like is at the end of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, when they're about to attack the Frenchman, and then out of nowhere the police come and just arrest the cast. Sir, what's your number four?
My number four is the deconstructive parody. Essentially, I think that this whole movie is, of course, just it's supposed to be a huge deconstructive parody, and that I think one of the main points of the deconstructive parody as a storytelling device is to teach a lesson that you otherwise couldn't teach with just a funny parody or just kind of a send-up or whatever, revisionist, anything like that. And that it's kind of like an initiatory story where you, by the end of it, are supposed to be changed in some way and have like a different opinion. And I think Joss Whedon is very aware of that fact, even in the fact that he uses, or especially shown by the fact that he uses all these ancient symbols, and he matches the characters up like so well with them.
Yeah.
And I think kind of the whole point of the movie is just that we as the audience are the only ones who have the power to actually change anything that we see, and what's, to change the current system, I guess, that Joss Whedon sees a problem with.
Yeah.
So, that's, I think it does really well as that. Kyle, your number
four.
Four.
My number four is Purple Patches, which I think is a version of Purple Prose, which is when Mordecai gives his, like, really floofy, I guess it's this monologue on the phone with the guys. Uh-huh. He's saying how, like, the sheep have gone up the hill and whatever, and like they're just making fun of him the whole time. But it's, I don't know the exact definition of purple prose, but it's, I think it's when a character breaks into this really kind of floofy dialogue.
Like, eloquent in a spot where they probably needn't be.
Mordecai, baby, what's happening? How's the weather up top?
The lambs have passed through the gate. They are come to the killing floor.
Well, you're doing a great job out there.
By the numbers, man, you got to start it off just right. So we'll talk to you later, okay?
Their blind eyes see nothing of the horrors to come. Their ears are stopped.
They are the gods' fools.
Well, that's how it works.
Cleanse them. Cleanse the world of their ignorance and sin. Bathe them in the crimson of... Am I on speakerphone?
No, absolutely not. Speakerphone, no. No, I wouldn't do that.
Yes, I am. I can hear the echo.
But it's just hilarious because he breaks into this really dramatic speech, and then he cuts himself off because he's like, am I on speakerphone? And it's just such a funny scene. That scene's also one of the better scenes in the movie, because his character is just so gross and so crazy.
Creepy.
But purple patches, which I think is just when it happens, very patch-like, not a lot. Nick, what's your number four?
My number four is a trope called Break the Cutie, and it's where a series or a TV show movie introduce a character as being sweet and lovable, and then basically the writers and the director destroy that person like throughout the show. And that's basically what the whole goal of the people creating this work for the ancients is to break Dana. My example of this, there are a bunch. I decided to go with a non-horror movie one, though. My example of this is Sarah Goldfarb in Requiem for a Dream. She's this sweet old lady, and the whole movie is, like, the heroine part aside, I think her part is, you know, devastating. That's my number four. Sir, what's your number three trope?
My number three trope is karmic death. Just basically another one of the main points I think Joss Whedon uses to show just what he's trying to do. Just that, I think it's a very symbolic movie. I think it's kind of showing Joss Whedon's. I doubt that he believes any of this symbolic stuff. I just think he is showing his wide range as a storyteller and what he's seen, and just that everybody kind of, especially the villains, die by something they've invoked or something they've essentially caused and whatnot.
This is also my number three. And one thing that I like about the way the quote unquote villains die is that it's much more graphic. And it's on screen as opposed to the main characters. The most graphic that we really see is the scholar guy getting stabbed
to the neck.
Yeah. But other than that, like, we don't see, I think her name is Jules. We don't see Jules's head get cut off. We just see the jock.
Blood spurting and everything.
Yeah. We just see the jock guy like hit a wall basically, but these other people, it's a little bit more, involved. So
yeah.
Yeah, karmic death is also my number three. My example for it is Scar's death in Lion King, being killed by the hyenas.
God, man.
Good movie. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three is Mood Whiplash, which this movie is full of, just because it'll go from a really intense, horrific scene to Marty talking about dismembering someone with a trowel or something, and it's constantly going back and forth between being a really hilarious movie to being just a really graphic, intense horror movie. But I think that really works for this movie, and that's why it's my number three.
All right. Sir, what's your number two?
My number two is You Bastard, which I think is one of the main points of the entire film.
That's
the trope where...
South Park related.
You killed Kenny.
Bastard. It's the trope basically where you're enjoying typical sex violence, the American way, something like that on screen or through some video game, and all of a sudden the story basically points a finger at you and it's like, you're a shithead for enjoying this. And essentially that's basically one of the main tropes of this film. The ancient ones are horror movie viewers, and the corporate folks are Hollywood's current leaders. Their boss is called the director. It's one of those things. And it's funny too, the main scientist, it's tvtropes.org points out, one of them, they're clearly kind of upset at the fact that everything's so cliche and they can't do anything creative. And one, you know, the one guy is saying, I'll never see a merman. You know, he's, he wants to see it so badly. He thinks it would be so awesome.
It's like the indie art house film.
Right. And, let's be honest here. What vicious merman movie has there been? It's been any good? He's definitely correct.
Yeah.
Hollywood, get on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think that's the first main point that Whedon is trying. That's the problem that he's putting to us, is that we, the audience, have a problem that we are causing this kind of lack of creativity. And yeah, Kyle, what's your number two?
My number two is Brick Joke, which is a variation of Chekhov's gun, where the reveal of the object or something is a joke. So a good example would be with we talked about it earlier with the zoologist.
Oh, and the unicorn.
Yeah, and how he talks about that really early on, and then it shows up later. And then also with the merman, how he jokes about seeing it, and then at the very end, you eventually do, and it's a funny moment, despite being really graphic and stuff.
The blood spurting out of the blowhole.
Yeah, so I think this movie does that a couple times, and I think it's really effective, and like, that's when you watch the movie a second time, that's when you really see it, and you're like, oh man, like he was holding on to that shell in the basement, and then he was so close.
But, you see all the things that they almost could have
done. Yeah. Brick joke.
All right, my number two is called The Cassandra, and this is based on the myth about a woman named Cassandra who the gods had cursed and basically gave her the power of being able to see the future, and yet no one would believe her. And that's basically what Marty is. He realized what's going on. He knows that there is something up, but nobody believes him because he's got, you know, the fool, paranoid, pothead type stereotype going on about him. My example of this is an episode of Doctor Who called Midnight, in which the Doctor is on a bus and there's an alien in it who is possessing people so that they are forced to keep repeating everything that everybody's saying. And then after a while, people start blaming the Doctor, thinking he's the one causing the problems, even though he's trying to tell them that there's something else going on, but nobody believes him. So the Cassandra, I think it's an awesome trope. It's not used quite enough.
It's true.
I would say that it's gonna spoil a movie. Never mind.
I'm in.
I'll say it off air.
Okay.
Sir, what's your number one?
My number one is The Fool, and which is in the film played by Marty, and that's his symbol. In symbolism, in the tarot, the Fool is also, he also represents Christ. He also represents the Messiah figure, as well as like all the most basic part of humanity that has like the full potential and creativity to go either way or figure anything out. So it's kind of like a dual symbol, where in one way it's he's dumb, however he's wise. It's also associated with the god Dionysus and
this
the god of drunkenness and altered states, which is pretty interesting that he, of course, is in an altered state, and that's what helps him figure it out.
Now that you mention it, this movie does kind of subvert the Christ-like character, because Marty could have been that if he.
Oh yeah, Marty is that for sure.
But he should at the end get killed to save humanity. But then he doesn't.
He does kind of get killed to save humanity because he represents us. We, the audience, is represented by the ancient ones, as well as there's the viewer, the real audience member, the single individual one represented by Marty. And the answer is that he is, you know, he dies in the end. He essentially destroys everything, restarts everything. And earlier in the film, he's a savior to the main character. He even dies, comes back to life. He's completely outside of the film. He even goes into the grave at one point, just like Christ did.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting that, you know, and the whole point of The Fool is just that we, there's a quote where basically it talks about how the fool's symbolism is that because just like a clown or a shaman in their medicinal ceremonies and rites, doctors and shamans act mad, and through frenzied dancing and extravagances, they try to invert the prevailing evil order. That's essentially what he represents. So through this kind of altered state of consciousness and and just his own purity as a character, which The Fool represents also. He kind of is the key to what we need to do, which is essentially throw all of the... It's almost like Joss Whedon is saying, throw everything out, restart everything, and,
and that's
kind
what
of start saying. Telling your own stories. I think as a writer, that's kind of been the point of his whole career, it seems to me. Buffy's one of the more innovative shows to come around. It's really known for trying to create new tropes and trying to turn tropes on their head. Yeah. And
they even say that at the end, like, it's time to give somebody else a chance.
Right.
What I was saying about him being subverted at the end, though, is, like, in the most literal sense in the movie, like, mankind, not as a metaphor, but actual, like, other people who are being held at bay by the... or who are trying to hold the Ancient Ones at bay. If Marty just dies, then they go back to the status quo.
Right. He kind of... his sacrifice is like a mental sacrifice. He sacrifices for everyone.
Yeah.
He makes the choice to sacrifice essentially humanity. And he himself, he dies too. So it's kind of... that's just how I see it.
Okay. Kyle, what's your number one?
My number one is shout outs, which this movie has a ton of. Just a lot of different references to other movies like Funny Games, Sin City, Evil Dead. There's just a ton, especially like when all the elevator doors open, there's just so many. With the clowns, that razor guy, the guy with the razors in his head's kind of like Hellraiser. There's just like so many different. In the title screen is like a lot like the Funny Games title screen, how it is just so intense and everything.
When you see the title screen and it's them like just driving around talking about nothing, and then it's just like bam, Kevin in the Woods.
Oh yeah, that's like the biggest jump scare of the entire movie. Probably
it's cool too because it shows what's really terrifying. It shows what Joss Whedon thinks where the real horror is in bureaucracy and in the fact that there are just these like. I think there's a trope. What is it like? Working villains or something like that. One of the tropes associated with their characters, and just they're clocking in every day doing this. And
yeah,
I think it kind of hints that at least the co-director. It kind of hints at his evilness when he's talking about his wife installing the child safety stuff on his in his cabinets and just how angry he is about it and how he's like he's just determined to like tear rip him down. So it kind of shows that he just has no concern for even his own kids' safety.
No, he doesn't have any kids yet.
Oh yeah, well even so though, you know what I mean. It's kind of like this is a slight thing where you're kind of like, it's slightly shitty for that.
Yeah.
I just like how mundane that conversation is, and then you see what they're actually doing. It's
what they do for a living. It's kind of like terrifying.
It's like Pulp Fiction, them arguing about foot massage, then they go and kill all these people. You know?
Yeah. Ugh. What about you, Nick?
My number one is a trope called Final Girl. Basically, it's the last character left alive in the movie is a female, and she's the one who has to confront the killer. And this is basically similar to Break the Cutie. That's what the whole movie is about. And it does get subverted at the end because you think she's the final girl and then she's not. And if she had been the final girl, everything would have worked out okay. In the, the humanity sense of the outcome. It's something that's used a lot in horror movies though. And this part of what makes this movie work so well is that it's aware of that and it subverts it and plays with it in that the Ancient Ones, it's one of their requirements. Like it has to come down to her and whether or not she lives or dies. It doesn't really matter. But you see this in Halloween, I think, is a good example of Jamie Lee Curtis's character. But the example that I want to use is another horror movie, not a slasher movie though, but an Alien. Everything comes down to just Ripley.
All right,
she's the final girl. So plus Alien. Any excuse to talk about that movie?
Huh. There's a shout out to Alien 2 in this movie.
Is there?
Yeah, apparently there's a shot where like there's an alien leg that steps out or something, and it's like very similar to one of the last scenes in Alien. I don't know if I noticed it this when I just watched it, but it's on TV tropes, so
I missed it.
Yeah.
All right. Those are our top five tropes used in the movie Cabin in the Woods. If there are some good tropes that you like that we didn't mention, let us know. You can email us at onthetropes@gmail.com. When we come back,
we'll do something.
We've got another game.
This is your game, Nicholas, and welcome to it. I'm here to let you see the very first key, and others will follow.
You'll never know where you'll find them or how you'll need to use them. So keep your eyes open.
Welcome back to On the Tropes. We're going to replay the game Trope Down one more time.
We're going to replay the same game. So it's the same answers.
Same movies. You got to remember what they are.
Jurassic Park.
Since Cabin in the Woods made Kyle's top five list for Genre Busters and Sir's top five list for Chekhov's Gun, I decided that these Trope Down picks are going to be movies that we picked for those lists. It was a four-person show. It was the two of you, myself, and Themo. So I've got seven movies lined up.
Wait, for Chekhov's Gun and...
It's either a Chekhov's Gun or a Genre Buster. So I've got two movies that each of you picked and a few movies from Themo and myself.
Nice. It's kind of like a nostalgia show.
Yeah.
Like a nostalgia game.
And if you want to hear those...
It's real trivia. It's like in-universe trivia.
It's trivia about trivia.
Right. Yeah, it's very meta. Very meta. Very meta. Very meta.
Yeah. You guys ready? We're gonna do this.
I was born ready.
We're gonna do this non-bidding style. You just shout out when you think you're ready.
Shout out.
Is it okay if I say I was born ready? Yeah, everybody's too young to remember what that's from.
I don't know what that's from.
A horrible serial killer.
The way we're gonna do it though is you only get to guess two or three times. What do you think?
I don't know. Whatever.
We'll say guess as many times as you want.
We'll say three times per movie.
I feel like once you guess two or three times, you're probably
100 times.
Yeah, you're probably. Give up after two or three guesses.
Three times per movie.
I can't even. Right. I don't know if I'll get to three.
Here's a clue. Before we even start, this made a Chekhov's Gun.
Okay.
Indiana Jones.
Incorrect.
That's one of your guesses. I don't even remember. I don't even remember what one of my
wait, that counted? Guns were.
No, that doesn't count.
Is this just to decide who goes first?
I'm just gonna name stuff off. No,
I also always go younger. Youngest person.
No,
first.
Just shout out when you think you know. What
Shaun
it is.
Of the Dead.
Oh, you fuckers.
Got it.
No, that's not it.
Oh.
Are you gonna? I haven't said any of the tropes.
Then yet. Hurry up.
Chekhov's Gunman, blessed with suck, artistic license, chemistry. Absurdly ineffective barricade.
This is totally on my list.
Creator cameo.
And say it. The
fuck is it? No, I can't remember.
Exposed extraterrestrials.
Oh, Signs?
Yes.
Nice.
One to Kyle. That was
that
one.
That wasn't on my list.
That was one of Kyle's.
When I heard Chekhov's Gunman, I think maybe I have one that's.
That was with the water.
That was one of Kyle's. That made Kyle's number five.
Nice. Yeah, I just have this creeping fear that
I thought you knew what it was, and you're
gonna miss
listening.
Every single one that's mine for sure. That's probably the other ones too.
Yeah.
Alrighty. This also was a Chekhov's Gun. Attempted rape. Anti-love song. Oh, a couple of these are just dead giveaways. Brick joke. Breaking speech. The Casanova. Chase scene. Dueling hackers.
Matrix?
Nope.
Net?
MacGuffin? Leaning on the fourth
Hackers?
Wall. Nope. The New Russia?
Eastern Promises?
Nope. The Pen is Mightier. Out with a Bang? All right. I'll give one that might give it away.
Are you looking up these live?
Oh, yes.
This guy.
Yeah, what, do you have a list made?
Wow.
Bond villain stupidity.
Goldeneye?
Yeah. That was Sirs.
Wow.
Oh, with the pen.
Number four, Chekhov's Gun.
Yeah. Attempted rape when she hits on a top attacks him.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite Bond girl name.
On a top. Definitely the best one. I think that's the one that fulfills the dream of Bond girl names. That's what you want, just as stupid as possible.
Yeah, if there's a way to go, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, yeah, it's just to go all the way with Bond. I don't think you should hold anything back. It should be almost a parody.
Alrighty. This one was another Chekhov's Gun. This is from my list, actually.
Oh, great.
Catchphrase. Chekhov's Gun. Chekhov's Skill. Cool car.
Big Lebowski.
Nope. Cool shades. Einstein hair. The 80s. The 50s.
Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct, sir. That was my number two, Chekhov's gun.
So right now it's 2-1.
I was just talking about Michael J. Fox at work, the sweetheart of America.
He is. Alex P. Keaton.
I think it's awesome that he's back on.
Yeah.
I want to see him play like a dark role.
This one was a genre buster. Invincibility power up. Jerk ass. Love makes you dumb / crazy / evil. Video game realism.
Wreck-It Ralph?
No.
Punch Drunk Love?
No. Manic Pixie Dream Girl? Musical Assassin?
Kung Fu. Hustle? No.
No.
I know what you're thinking of.
Pac-Man Fever?
It's kind of drug reference. It's about throwing money at strippers and failing NFL tests. What are you talking about? It's a great player, though. Come on. Come on, folks.
Pac-Man Jones.
Adaptation Die Job.
I feel like that should give it away. I'm just trying to think of what movies are.
Boss Battle.
You said it's not Scott Pilgrim?
It is Scott Pilgrim.
No. Oh, did someone not guess that?
No, I don't think anybody guessed.
Oh.
I was about to guess Big Trouble in Little China.
All right, it's 2-2. Scott Pilgrim was actually Sir's number 5 for genre busting.
Nice.
Good movie. She dusts.
She dusts.
Has Big Trouble in Little China showed up on anybody's list yet?
This one. It's one of Themo's picks. Anti-hero.
For what?
I can't say.
Arrogant
Bowling Guy.
Big Lebowski?
Yes. Kyle takes the lead. That was Themo's...
Over the line!
That was Themo's number 2 genre busting list. Sir, you got to get this one right to tie it up.
To stay in it.
Yeah. To stay alive. This was a Chekhov's gun pick. Academy of Evil. Affectionate Parody. Bond Girl. One of these tropes is called Butt Monkey. Catchphrase.
Face Off?
No.
So that would be more like...
Deer in the Headlights.
The Long Kiss Goodnight.
No. And you've only got one guess left.
What? Oh yeah, I forgot. We only have 3. I had totally forgotten that right after we established that rule.
Evil Eyebrows. Evil Plan.
Evil Eyebrows.
Fat Bastard.
What? Did you say what list this was?
A Chekhov's Gun. Lampshade Hanging. Luke, I am your father. No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to dine.
What? It's not Chekhov's gun.
Mm-hmm. Shoe phone. Shoe slap. The 60s.
Is it Gold Member? No. Austin Powers?
Yes, it's Austin Powers. Mm-hmm.
Really? Shoe phone?
Yeah, I never would have guessed that. I haven't seen that.
What's the Chekhov's gun from once. Awesome Powers?
It was actually penis yours. Pump? Yes. It was, I think, your number nice. One. It was the
Oh, it was the penis pump, yeah. That's awesome.
All right. So
one Swedish made penis enlarger.
Swedish made penis enlarger pump and me. This sort of thing is my bag, baby. Written. By Austin Powers. All right, so that was Trope Down, and that was episode 21, our discussion of Cabin in the Woods. If you have your own thoughts on Cabin in the Woods, let us know. Sir, where can they track us down?
On Facebook, facebook.com/onthetropes. Gmail, onthetropes@gmail.com and on iTunes just by looking us up on iTunes, typing in On the Tropes, your search bar.
It's true. And Kyle, your show is starting to get some play on TV Tropes.
Yeah, we decided to hop on the trope bandwagon, I guess. We added a new segment to On the Rocks called The Weekly Trope, where we cover a trope but video game based. So, yeah, we dedicate like a segment of our show to just discussing a trope and games that are good examples of it and why it's successful and why it's a trope. So it's pretty cool. On the Rocks.
Yep, and they've been around a lot longer than we are.
Yeah.
And they get much drunker than we do on these.
Yeah, we do. We do. It's pretty fun. It's just a drunk video game podcast where we have a lot of fun.
We do a lot more methamphetamines, though, probably.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Much more crystal.
It would be hard to do more methamphetamines than we do on this show.
I think so. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I don't know if I should plug TV Tropes. No, I'm sure they don't want that kind of endorsement right after.
We're not associated with them.
we are the one who knocks.
No, people, we're kidding. We do not do methamphetamines.
No, never.
If you want to check out more tropes, learn more about Cabin in the Woods, or delve more into any of the 15 tropes that we named as our top five, check out tvtropes.org. They have lots more fun stuff on there.
Make sure you have some time set aside, because you will...
Yeah, it'll burn an hour or two.
Yeah, you'll be there for a while.
I like to think of it as going down the rabbit hole.
Definitely.
So as always, I've been your host, Nick, and we have been...
Sir.
And Kyle.
And join us next week when we talk about the trope, The End. Or is it? Welcome back to On the Tropes. Oh, I dropped my pen.